You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 16th of March 2023 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. It's Thursday, which means we have geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org with us today. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
I've noticed that my mood is never really affected by the depressive nature of what we talk about. I think that's pretty remarkable. Unfortunately, today is a little bit on the depressing side.
Well, I think you make a very good point there, actually. We do have to talk about a lot of depressing news, and we always have to put a cheerful face on it. There are always people that are worse off than us. Things could always be worse. And I do like to think that we do portray an optimistic face here at Radio Albion. And the way that we look at it is that the glass is always half full rather than half empty. And what we're going to be talking about today is the emptying of the glass, I guess you could say. We're going to be talking about this problem that we've just had with the Silicon Valley Bank and the financial system. And we are quoting from globalresearch.ca. On Friday, March the 10th, Silicon Valley Bank collapsed and was taken over by federal regulators. The SVB was the 16th largest bank in the country, and its bankruptcy was the second largest in US history, following Washington Mutual in 2008. Despite its size, SVB was not a systemically important financial institution, or a SIFI, as defined in the Dodd-Frank Act, which requires insolvent SIFIs to bail in the money of their creditors to recapitalize themselves. Technically, the cutoff for SIFIs is $250 billion in assets. However, the reason they are called systemically important is not their asset size, but the fact that their failure could bring down the whole financial system. That designation comes chiefly from their exposure to derivatives, the global casino that is so highly interconnected that it is a house of cards. Pull out one card and the whole house collapses. SVB held $27.7 billion in derivatives. No small sum, but it is only 0.05% of the $55,387 billion or $55.387 trillion held by JP Morgan, the largest US derivatives bank. SVB could be the canary in the coal mine, foreshadowing the fate of other overextended banks, but its collapse is not the sort of systemic risk that is predicted to trigger contagion. As reported by CNN, despite initial panic on Wall Street, analysts said SVB's collapse is unlikely to set off the kind of domino effect that gripped the banking industry during the financial crisis. The system is as well capitalized and liquid as it has ever been, Moody's chief economist Mark Zandi said. The banks that are now in trouble are much too small to be a meaningful threat to the broader system. No later than Monday morning, all insured depositors will have full access to their insured deposits, according to the FDIC. It will pay uninsured depositors on advance dividend within the next week. A fuller report on the collapse of SVB will have to wait on developments that occur over the weekend and soon thereafter. The 2010 Dodd-Frank Act eliminated taxpayer bailouts by requiring insolvent SIFIs to recapitalize themselves with the funds of their creditors. That's the so-called bail-in. Creditors are defined to include depositors, but deposits under $250,000 are protected by FDIC insurance. However, the FDIC fund is sufficient to cover only about 2% of the $9.6 trillion in U.S. insured deposits. A nationwide crisis triggering bank runs across the country, as happened in the early 1930s, would wipe out the fund. Today, some financial pundits are predicting a crisis of that magnitude in the quadrillion-dollar-plus derivatives market due to rapidly rising interest rates. And this podcast today will look at how likely that is and what can be done either to prevent it or to dodge out of the way. So it seems like the authorities are saying this is nothing to worry about. Matt, what are your thoughts?
Well, they say that all the time. The whole point of these official pronouncements, the whole point is to deceive. And certainly now that they quoted Moody, that rates creditworthiness, which is completely politicized. We've dealt with that before. A derivative is, we'll talk about more about that here in a minute, but it's the worst way to for an economy to function. And it's very similar, if not identical, to casino winnings. Because if the asset that you don't own but you're still betting on increases, you get paid despite no increase in the economy, no production whatsoever. This is what happens when you have a purely financialized system with all value-added businesses going abroad. This is all that's left. So it's not so much that the Feds are going to bail out this particular bank. But I know, not just banks in the U.S., but banks around the world are failing. The Central Bank of Lebanon has failed entirely. There's a couple in Switzerland. And it isn't so much that people are simply withdrawing. This has been going on for the last year and a half or so, that capitalization has gone down by more than half. But when you have banks that are giving, 0.2% or even less of interest on deposits, and now you have rising interest rates on federal securities. Well, where's the money going to go? Right now, it might be a panic, but since the interest rate hikes that we've spoken about on this show, money is leaving simple deposits and going to Fed securities because, of course, the interest rates are higher. So you have both activities going on. This isn't anything that we didn't predict. Nothing was learned in 2008. I don't think the economy ever recovered from 2008. The difference, though, in 2008 was that this was a housing market issue. You did have that underlying asset, but there isn't anything in the derivatives market. This is what happens. If fictitious money gets used to leverage more fictitious money, so you end up. And then the claim is that the asset provides the value. But as far as banks are concerned, it doesn't, because a bank balance sheet will show how much an asset is worth at the time it was bought, not what's happened to it since then. So nothing is real. Nothing is created in any of this. This is fictitious money being used to leverage more. So you have layer after layer after layer of separation from actual economic production. Of course, the system can't last, and it's something that is purging, like most of these panics, purging small and medium sized investors completely from the market and concentrating more and more of power. Derivatives were just fast money, but I think the total amount of outstanding derivatives is something like $quintillion, which this is the first time I've ever heard that word. Being used financially. The fact is that world GDP is something like $175 trillion. So here you have many times the amount of the entire economic value of the world held in derivatives, proving that this has nothing to do with economics. It has nothing to do with production. And when you've had no economic recovery in the U.S., despite the propaganda from the regime, if we use older statistical methods rather than the newer ones, you realize it's gone nowhere. Nothing has been recovered either from 2008 or 2020. No production. And that's why inflation is much higher than has been reported, because money is being pumped into the system, either in bailouts, which are still going on, you know, as she mentions, the Dodd-Frank Act is a shield. It's a almost a form of displacement. You know, it's not what it says it is. It has nothing to do. It just means that your deposits now are seizable in these huge banks, who of course have most of the power, and the Federal Reserve, or in Washington itself. So ultimately, it comes down to interest rate hikes and the fact that there's been no recovery since 2008. Nothing has been learned. I mean, the entire premise of the banking industry is that they will be bailed out in one form or another. And the financial media uses very highly, out of nowhere, they use highly technical descriptions. Even the phrase quantitative easing is unnecessarily opaque to people. Unnecessarily, you know, it's designed for people to not know what it is. And, you know, they describe bailouts in a very convoluted way, in using language that they use nowhere else. So many of these things, like derivatives, are so out of the ken of the average, even the average educated American, because it's really hard for normal people to wrap their heads around money that money being created on top of money, none of which is actually real, none of which is based on production or the value of actual assets. That's why you could have a quintillion dollars in outstanding derivatives, even though, you know, that's $117-118 trillion is the entire economic value of the world. Yeah, the system is going to collapse entirely. How the regime is going to couch it, the language that they're going to use, how they're going to cover it up, it has to go beyond just, oh, you know, there's not a problem. You know, like the CNN comment, how they're going to cover this up is, and I think they're going to continue to manipulate the ways that economic figures are calculated. That's been going on since at least 1980. And I keep talking about shadow statistics. The rebels from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, who left government service and created their own organization because they were being told to lie. So I think it's going to be continuing. You know, GDP, inflation, money supply, employment, all of these have new methods to calculate that have no bearing on reality. So I think that's what's going to happen. And creditors, or so-called depositors, which are considered creditors, are going to have their assets seized. And there's even been glitches, like in Wells Fargo, glitches that show zero. They call them glitches that show zero balance in people's checking and savings accounts. They call it glitches, but in fact, they're not. So nothing is stable right now. But this wasn't really hard to predict. I predicted it. We predicted it many years ago. So it's no shock, but that's the nature of a totally financialized system.
So I guess you could simplify it and say the financial instruments have increased at the same time as all the manufacturing has decreased, and now the economy is practically just all these financial instruments. Well, let's have a closer look at what these derivatives are. In 2002, mega investor Warren Buffett wrote that derivatives were financial weapons of mass destruction. At that time, their total notional value, which is the value of the underlying assets from which the so-called derivatives were derived, was estimated at $56 trillion. Investopedia reported in May 2022 that the derivatives bubble had reached an estimated $600 trillion, according to the Bank for International Settlements, and that the total is often estimated at over $1 quadrillion. Nobody knows for sure because most of the trades are done privately. As of the third quarter of 2022, according to the quarterly report on bank trading and derivatives activities of the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, the Federal Bank Regulator, a total of 1,211 insured U.S. national and state commercial banks and savings associations held derivatives, but 88.6% of these were concentrated in only four large banks. JP Morgan Chase with $54.3 trillion, Goldman Sachs with $51 trillion, Citibank with $46 trillion, and Bank of America with $21 trillion, followed by Wells Fargo with $12 trillion. A full list can be found elsewhere. Unlike in 2008 to 2009, when the big derivatives concerns were mortgage-backed securities and credit default swaps, today the largest and riskiest category is interest rate products. The original purpose of derivatives was to help farmers and other producers manage the risks of dramatic changes in the markets for raw materials. But in recent times, they have exploded into powerful vehicles for leveraged speculation, which is simply borrowing to gamble. In their basic form, derivatives are just bets, a giant casino in which players hedge against a variety of changes in market conditions, such as interest rates, exchange rates, defaults, etc. They are sold as insurance against risk, which is then passed off to the counterparty to the bet. But the risk is still there. And if the counterparty can't pay, both parties lose. In systemically important situations, the government winds up footing the bill. Like at a racetrack, players can bet, although they have no interest in the underlying asset, the horse. This has allowed derivative bets to grow to many times global gross domestic product and has added another element of risk. If you don't own the barn on which you are betting, the temptation is there to burn down the barn to get the insurance. The financial entities taking these bets typically hedge by betting both ways, and they are highly interconnected. If counterparties don't get paid, they can't pay their own counterparties, and the whole system can go down very quickly, a systemic risk called the domino effect. That is why insolvent SIFIs had to be bailed out in the global financial crisis of 2007 and 9. First with $700 billion worth of taxpayer money, and then by the Federal Reserve with a quantitative easing. Derivatives were at the heart of that crisis. Lehman Brothers were one of the derivative entities with bets across the system. So was insurance company AIG, which managed to survive due to a whopping $182 billion bailout from the US Treasury. But Lehman was considered too weakly collateralized to salvage. It went down, and the Great Recession followed. So there is an incentive there to get it all interconnected so that you know that you're going to be bailed out if things go wrong. And this bit here where he was saying about burning the barn down, I mean, that could possibly be taken literally when you look at some of these food factories that have recently been burning down. I wonder if that may be connected to this. Matt, what do you think of what's being said here about these derivatives?
Well, I like the casino analogy or the racetrack analogy. You could use a bunch of different ones. An easy way to describe it, it's if you're playing roulette at a casino and you win, and it turns out that the casino can't pay you because they don't, it's worthless, or it's become worthless. They were misled about how much it was worth. Or the opposite way, that you lose and it turns out you've been using credit this whole time, credit you don't have because someone told you it was worth more, you were worth more than you really are. So either one of those actually works. That's really what the crisis comes down to. But beyond that, you know, we've had, 15 years of bailouts to reestablish real estate prices. But with real estate prices also, that spills over into all kinds of securities. So asset prices were inflated years ago. And that also includes all securities that any bank may hold. So that artificial bubble made trillions of dollars for the elites in the regime. And when, as a result of that, when interest rates were reduced to almost zero, you had a soaring homeownership explosion, a huge bond market boom. As rates fell below 0.5%, the whole question then is, given this completely artificial so-called prosperity, which is considered economic growth, by the way, which is, you know, nonsensical, what the heck is going to happen when interest rates rise, especially rising as rapidly as they did? And we've done shows on this several times over the last year and a half. And you know, rising interest rates cause bond prices or the price of loans to fall. Bond prices are falling, but also the same that the value of these package of mortgage and other stocks and bonds. As interest rates rise, the value of this stuff has gone down. And so when someone demands the initial value of whatever asset we're talking about, they don't have it. someone, I think it was Michael Hudson, used the example of the SNL collapse in the 1980s. The SNL savings and loans made long-term mortgages at decent rates. Then inflation increased and interest rates rose. The bank then couldn't pay depositors the now higher rates because their mortgage investments were fixed at a rate prior to the inflation. So depositors withdrew their money. And that's an excellent analogy for what I'm trying to talk about here. So SNL had to sell their mortgage to pay this money. Ultimately they collapsed because the face value of these debts was lower because of higher rates. And this is what it comes down to. And so therefore the rise in interest rates, which had no connection to inflation, which is much higher than it's been reported, plus no real productive economic activity, any bubble that's created, has to collapse. Interest rates were the signal that this can't continue. And I'm not sure, but it's possible that they may lower interest rates again to keep this fraud going. But even then, you're just postponing the inevitable. And as Paul Craig Roberts and others have said, it's the Clinton era elimination of the Glass-Steagall Act, which separated commercial from investment banking, that caused not only 2008, but today. Glass-Steagall meant that essentially came down to the a prohibition of using depositors' money for speculative or derivative purposes. And when that was, I think it was 99 when that was withdrawn, and you had ultimately a bubble that finally burst in 2008. On top of that, you have the idea that you're going to be bailed out one way or the other. The concept of the Fed put means that, well, if something like this is going to happen, we're going to lower our rates so you can borrow more cheaply. Well, that hasn't happened so far. Rates have actually gone up. So you have two things happening. You have a withdrawal of deposits because if they want to put it into higher rate securities, and the total lack of faith in the system, and the fact that the bank's borrowing now has gone up. And with fewer assets or depreciating assets to back it up, this is serious. I think ultimately the Fed may just have to lower rates again, but then you're talking about more inflation. And the very fact that they connect inflation to rising wage levels, despite the fact that any rise in wage has been destroyed by inflation anyway, means that now unemployment is in the interest of the regime. And that's why we've said before, the unemployment figures are deliberately manipulated. Using only one very, very controlled measure, just those the unemployment rate is just those who are collecting unemployment benefits, and nobody else. So that's going to be artificially low, and that's what's going to be the headline number. Of course, that's not the real unemployment rate. It's not the real inflation rate. And the regime is living in an alternative reality when they believe that inflation comes down to the fact that workers are making too much money. But that's the claim.
Well, we pointed out earlier that these derivatives come from private sales, so we're really not sure of how much there are there, but they're also linked with the shadow banking system. Derivatives are largely a creation of this shadow banking system, a group of financial intermediaries that facilitates the creation of credit globally, but whose members are not subject to regulatory oversight. The shadow banking system also includes unregulated activities by regulated institutions. It includes the repo market, which evolved as a sort of pawn shop for large institutional investors with more than $250,000 to deposit. The repo market is a safe place for these lenders, including pension funds and the US Treasury, to park their money and earn a bit of interest. But its safety is insured not by the FDIC, but by sound collateral posted by the borrowers, preferably in the form of federal securities. As explained by Professor Gary Gorton, this banking system, the shadow or parallel banking system, repo based on securitization, is a genuine banking system, as large as the traditional regulated banking system. It is of critical importance to the economy because it is the funding basis for the traditional banking system. Without it, traditional banks will not lend, and credit, which is essential for job creation, will not be created. While it is true that banks create the money they lend simply by writing loans into the accounts of their borrowers, they still need liquidity to clear withdrawals, and for that they largely rely on the repo market, which has a daily turnover just in the United States of over $1 trillion. British financial commentator Alistair MacLeod observes that the derivatives market was built on cheap repo credit, but interest rates have shot up and credit is no longer cheap, even for financial institutions. According to a December 2022 report by the BIS, $80 trillion in foreign exchange derivatives that are off a balance sheet or documented only in the footnotes of bank reports are about to reset, which means roll over at higher interest rates. Financial commentator George Gammon discusses the threat that this poses in a podcast he calls BIS Warns of 2023 Black Swan, a Derivatives Time Bomb. Another time bomb in the news is Credit Suisse, a giant Swiss derivatives bank that was hit with an $88 billion run on its deposits by large institutional investors late in 2022. The bank was bailed out by the Swiss National Bank through swap lines with the US Federal Reserve at 3.33% interest. I think I understand most of this, but I'm not quite sure what it means by repo market, because I always thought that was things like cars that have been repossessed and were sold cheaply. And this seems to be something different to that. Could you expand upon that a little bit, please, Matt, and then comment on this, on the rest of this?
Yeah. Unlike, you know, repo, I mean, that's, you know, Americans use the same term to refer to repossession. In this case, it means repurchase. To put it very simply, if interest rates are low, or almost non-existent, the Fed may forward money to elite bankers, and the bankers probably don't have to pay the entire thing back. It's a way to get very quick cash. But when interest rates rise, you can't do this anymore. When interest rates rise, you know, it comes down to the fact that you've had almost 0% interest rates since 2008. This has nothing to do with markets. It didn't spur economic growth. The only thing it created is these kind of new, whether it be your derivatives or repo things, that essentially is institutionalized corruption. The market mechanism doesn't exist, but all of these kind of, even the financial press, they think in market terms, but this is an oligarchy or worse. So a policy that may work in a market is not going to work under the conditions of oligarchy or monopoly. And, you know, as far as regulation is concerned, these banks are more powerful than governments. I've said that about a trillion times. Since these banks are required by governments so governments can continue to function, forwarding this money, there's also the reverse repo. Forwarding this money gives banks almost total power. And this is why in 99 the law was repealed and this ridiculous Dodd Act was passed. I guess that was 2010. Private property is gone under conditions of oligarchy, unlike a market. So if the bank gets in trouble, the bail-in means everything that you have connected to the bank can be seized. It's almost like a reverse bankruptcy for you, but it works certainly for them. And so as the real estate market is now, you know, not only flat but substantially declining, it was 20% just last year, or at the end of last year, this means the death of small banks, because small banks usually are the ones that forward mortgages to people, and they're on edge to begin with. Remember, this isn't anything new. This is, people have been talking about this, at least on our side, for roughly, well, since 2020, if not a little bit earlier, the collapse of capitalization. You know, it wasn't that long ago, I say 50, 60 years ago, where these lines of credit weren't at the foundation of the economy. When you had a functional manufacturing and farming base, unlike now, so much business expansion was financed through savings, actual cash on hand or future value that's going to be added through manufacturing, actual real economy. Now everything is based on loans. And you have all of these weird devices, usually described in either irrelevant or highly technical terms, that allows the oligarchy to rely on either the bailout or the Fed. Remember, the Great Reset was based on seizing assets is based on seizing assets in exchange for debt reduction. So the repo market, financing, and derivatives market is perfectly in line with Schwab and the whole Great Reset idea. This is the same group of people anyway. This list of banks are the same people that are over at Davos. It's an institutionalization of that, where when banks get in trouble, they can then seize the assets of their depositors, much weaker than themselves, to stay stable. No one benefits, of course, except the banks. It really is a very bizarre form of bankruptcy that banks could use that comes at our expense.
Well, it's the Dodd Act that we will be looking at next and the perverse incentives created by it. In the new financial deal, Understanding the Dodd-Frank Act and its Unintended Consequences, Professor David Skeel refutes what he calls the Lehman myth, the widespread belief that Lehman's collapse resulted from the decision to allow it to fail. He blames the 2005 Safe Harbor Amendment to the bankruptcy law, which says that the collateral posted by insolvent borrowers for both repo loans and derivatives has safe harbor status, exempting it from recovery by the bankruptcy court. When Lehman appeared to be in trouble, the repo and derivatives traders all rushed to claim the collateral before it ran out, and the court had no power to stop them. So why not repeal the amendment? In a 2014 article titled The Roots of Shadow Banking, Professor Enrico Perotti of the University of Amsterdam explained that the safe harbor exemption is a critical feature of the shadow banking system and one that it needs to function. Like traditional banks, shadow banks create credit in the form of loans backed by demandable debt, short-term loans or deposits that can be recalled on demand. In the traditional banking system, the promise that the depositor can get his money back on demand is made credible by government-backed deposit insurance and access to central bank funding. The shadow banks needed their own variant of demandable debt, and they got it through the privilege of super priority in bankruptcy. The dilemma of our current banking system is that lenders won't advance the short-term liquidity needed to fund repo loans without an ironclad guarantee. But the guarantee that makes the lender's money safe makes the system itself very risky. When a debtor appears to be on shaky ground, there will be a predictable stampede by favoured creditors to grab the collateral in a rush for the exits that can propel an otherwise viable debtor into bankruptcy, and that is what happened to Lehman Brothers. Derivatives were granted safe harbour because allowing them to fail was also considered a systemic risk. It could trigger the domino effect, taking the whole system down. The error, says Professor Skeel, was in the passage of the 2005 Safe Harbor Amendment. But the problem with repealing it now is that we will get the domino effect in the collapse of both the quadrillion-dollar derivatives market and the more than $1 trillion traded daily in the repo market. So it seems they have to have this in order to keep the system going, but it could also at the same time take the system apart. What are your thoughts on what's being said here on this Safe Harbor, Matt?
It's no surprise. This is what happens when there really is no more faith in the dollar. It's not an accident that this happened, I think, if not the day, a few days earlier, you had the rapprochement between or among Saudi Arabia, Russia, and China. Saudi Arabia was key to the at least a big key to the financial system. There's so much liquidity there. They're going to be relying mostly on drug money. And there's actually, from the Pandora Papers, there's some reason to believe that people have the major investors have left because they are dependent on money coming from the cartels in Mexico. That's a very involved argument we can't get into here. But what she's trying to say is if you realize, and only smart money knows this, dumb money doesn't know this, but if you realize that if a bank gets into serious trouble, they can seize your assets, they can seize your deposits. The minute you get even a rumor that there's something wrong with the bank, you're going to withdraw your money. And that was – it was just, Paul Craig Roberts that says it's incredibly irrational to have that system. And that's why she cited the New Financial Deal, David Skeel's book, because that's – and maybe it's not – it's not unintended consequences at all. It may well be intended consequences. As I said before, this the connection between repo and derivative is simply layers of unreality. Now, the system could have functioned a few years longer without the interest rate hikes. Most you know, smart money realizes that COVID was no accident. That's the first thing. You know, it shut down production. And what you had after COVID was a brief period of employment and inventory growth. But since there was no economic recovery in the meantime, it was just a spike just right after the lockdowns ended. And the regime continues to point to that as if it's a form of recovery. Having these loans, forwarding cash on demand, could have worked a few years longer if interest rates had stayed low. But and we'll talk about this just in 1 second. But they didn't. They went much higher than had been anticipated. And the Silicon Valley bet on the fact that interest rates would not go up. They just figured this is going to last forever. Therefore, they can get away with charging almost nothing to their depositors, but, you know, taking a huge percentage of their outstanding loans. Once that went up, bond prices collapsed. They were in serious trouble. And because it's still fairly small. The other thing is it's not really a startup bank funding startups. There are very few startups anymore. These have a lot of wealthy investors that they make deals with. It has nothing to do with actually starting a new productive enterprise. Banks aren't doing that anymore. Paul Craig Roberts has said it a few times now. They simply are asset stripping rather than creating new assets through labor. And the only ultimately, you know, yeah, they could money can be printed out of nothing, but that changes when a depositor asks for his money back. They actually need cash for this. You know, you can't just, you know, put a decimal point somewhere. And so at some point, at some level, reality has to hit all of this fantasy. And you have the entire profession of economics that thinks that this is perfectly normal. And there's nothing normal about having an economy based exclusively on debt used to finance more debt.
Well, let's finish up with a look at how the interest rates play into this. Interest rate derivatives are particularly vulnerable in today's high interest rate environment. From March 2022 to February 2023, the prime rate, which is the rate banks charge their best customers, shot up from 3.5% to 7.75%, a radical jump. Market analyst Stephanie Pomboy calls it an interest rate shock. It won't really hit the market until variable rate contracts reset, but $1 trillion in US corporate contracts are due to reset this year, another trillion next year, and another trillion the year after that. A few bank bankruptcies are manageable, but an interest rate shock to the massive derivatives market could take down the whole economy. As Michael Snyder wrote in a 2013 article titled "A Chilling Warning About Interest Rate Derivatives," will rapidly rising interest rates rip through the US financial system like a giant lawnmower blade? Yes, the US economy survived much higher interest rates in the past, but at that time, there were not hundreds of trillions of dollars worth of interest rate derivatives hanging over our financial system like a sword of Damocles. Rising interest rates could burst the derivatives bubble and cause massive bankruptcies around the globe, quoting Mexican billionaire Hugo Salinas Price. Of course, there are a whole lot of people out there that would be quite glad to see the too-big-to-fail banks go bankrupt, but the truth is that if they go down, our entire economy will go down with them. Our entire economic system is based on credit, and just like we saw back in 2008, if the big banks start failing, credit freezes up, and suddenly nobody can get any money for anything. There are safer ways to design the banking system, but they are not likely to be in place before the quadrillion dollar derivatives bubble bursts. Snyder was writing 10 years ago, and it hasn't burst yet, but this was chiefly because the Fed came through with the Fed put, the presumption that it would backstop the market in any sort of financial crisis. And it has performed as expected until now, but the Fed put has stripped it of its independence and its ability to perform its legislated duties. And of course, we also have to add here, they do seem to want to bring in this centralized digital currency as well. So, this could all be planned, that they want to collapse the economy and bring in a new system. But Matt, what are your final thoughts on all of this today?
Well, it's pretty remarkable that Snyder wrote this in 2013. And most people at the time, you know, thought that this was just an exaggeration. Many of them not quite certain what a derivative was 10 years ago. What he's saying in this quote is really important. Yeah, there's been high interest rates, late 70s, early 90s, stuff like that. Maybe nothing like the late 70s and early 80s. But you had a huge manufacturing, actual productive base in the American economy. It could handle something like this. Wages, comparatively speaking, were higher. I mean, you know, taking all factors into consideration. Here you have money being used to leverage more money. These derivatives, which is not based on the ownership of anything. Now you're talking about a ridiculous amount of this castles in the air. And yeah, the digital currency, I think it's going to be very difficult to push that through, especially with the tremendous restrictions that people think may happen. It's going to have to be a very gradual thing. But you notice what he's saying here is an absolute necessity for the Great Reset. This is the new normal now. And so when people are just up to their necks in debt, banks could make up their losses by seizing their assets. And the Fed put just another variation of a bailout, which doesn't seem to be happening right now. And the only people who are going to end up getting credit are the handful of major banks, part of BlackRock and Vanguard, that run the New York Fed. Really, there's only three. And so, yes, a very, very depressing topic.
Well, hopefully it won't happen for a little while yet anyway, or they may come up with some idea to fix things. We have to look on the bright side. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.